5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Actually, I'm having a wonderful time. I'm relaxing, watching TV, totally and completely enjoying myself.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 11, Something Wild. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
It's not Sarah D. Bunting. Adam Grossworth is back. Welcome back, Adam.
Woo.
Hi.
We don't do that thing on this podcast.
We don't.
There you go.
Sarah is out dealing with her family situation, and this is the first episode we are taping since the death of James Vanderbeek. When Sarah returns, we will have more to say about him in a club episode, and we will, of course, miss him, but we will honor his memory by being as honest about the character he played in Dawson's Creek as we imagine at least the version of him who made those self-deprecating Funny or Die clips in the 2010s would want us to. So look forward to that. We're, you know, we're sorry he's dead, but that doesn't mean we can't make fun of his character. Before we get into the episode this Friday, February 27th, it is again with this 277. Let's watch Ken Marino in The Other Two. He is, of course, in every episode, but we're going to be talking about Season 1, Episode 10. Chase performs at the VMAs. It is on HBO Max, and we'll put the link in the show note if you want to watch that ahead of time. And to get all of the information on how you join the club and more, againwiththispodcast.com/club. Adam, are you ready to talk about Something Wild? The show?
We'll see.
The episode, not the movie? Okay.
Let's find out.
Okay. Let's start with our B plot. Gale officially orders Dawson to return to his own life. On the road to Capeside, Jen is reading from Oliver's college's course catalog, which they have not decided what to call the school yet. So everyone just says this local college. Clip two.
You've got to take this class, Dawson. The Kasdan Family, A Colloquium in the Dynastic Rule in Hollywood.
Okay.
That be a class?
It wouldn't, except that Mr. Kasdan was the English teacher on the show because Jonathan Kasdan was a writer of 5 episodes of this show, and he is Lawrence Kasdan's son. So
okay. This
is the Dynastic Rule in Hollywood, I guess, but that sounds like a fucking terrible class.
Just weird. It's weird.
Yeah.
Also weird, I realize all these colleges are technically fictional, but like we live in the world. We know Worthington is Harvard. We know Back Bay is BU.
Yes.
There is a very excellent and well-known art school in Boston called Emerson. The fact that they are treating it like some podunk, this local film school, like be fake Emerson that Dawson would know about, even if he didn't want to apply there because it wasn't one of his top two.
Yes. Yeah. They talk about it like it's a community college or something.
Yeah. Like, it exists. Mm-hmm. It's good. Lots of people go there for art. I don't actually know if they have a film school. They're very well known for theater and visual arts. So it just call it Emerson and be done with it. It's really weird.
I know. Like I said, they have not decided what the analog is going to be at this point yet. So that might be part of it. We get to learn about Viz in episode 13. So look forward to that. And then a question mark.
Yay.
Anyway. Dawson teases Jen about really wanting him to enroll in this local college, like I said, and says he says he'll think about it later. Clip three.
I just want to savor the significance of this moment. This is the first time I've actually brought a girl home.
Well,
I'd hate to ruin the moment for you, but I think that I'm actually going through a rite of passage here too. This is the first time that I've been brought home.
Really?
Yeah, usually I get brought to a motel.
Already done that?
Yes, we have.
You want to do it again, you just let me know.
My Dawson Leary, I am shocked at your presumptuousness.
You know, you might not want to do grams while you run your hand up my thigh. Because it's just a little,
I'm sorry.
Grams is not English. That's a bad Grams, if that's what it was supposed to be.
Very weird.
Mm-hmm.
Also weird that I'm finding Dawson charming in this episode.
I know.
And the last one, too.
He's very likable with Jen. It's tough. It's tough for me.
Yeah.
I also would like to know which motels this Manhattan private school girl was brought to in New York. Like, famously not right, a place where there are motels.
They're really stuck on, like, Jen has a past, even though it's season four, and
five.
We're done with that. Like, this does not match any of her Cape Side experience at all. Everybody should be over it.
Yes. Yeah, there was a whole year where she didn't date anyone at all, and that was a plot point when she almost, like, hooked up with Jack, weirdly, on the ski trip. Anyway, as they drive into Cape Side, they don't notice that they're passing Pacey and Joey driving out of Cape Side, but we will get to them in the A-plot. And in case we weren't sure what happened after Jen's Graham's impression got Dawson all horned when they finally arrive at the Leary house, surrounded by the bright green lawn typical of a Cape Cod winter.
On which he parks.
Which he parks on, yes. Jen's fretting that Gail is going to know why they were so late. Dawson rhetorically asks how she possibly could, which is when Gail comes out, comments that she was getting worried, and hears the two kids simultaneously volunteer that they got gas and rested. And when Dawson heads for the door, Gail has to tell him his t-shirt is on inside out. In fact, it is his sweater, as you can see in the visual aids. But either way, way to keep it on the low, guys.
Yeah, I thought it was the t-shirt under the sweater.
Based on, I think it's like sticking out of the sweater, but
yeah,
it might be.
Either way, I definitely had that sweater. I'm pretty sure it's from Structure. So I was focusing on that.
Inside later on, Gail slightly struggles with a tray of tea for no evident plot reason other than so Dawson can take it from her. Like, we know he's polite. You don't have to make her look like a weak and feeble woman to set up what is coming later in the scene. And Dawson's hair is worse here than it has been in several episodes, maybe because we're supposed to think it got mussed during his sex capades, but it stays bad for the whole episode. So maybe that's just how it looks now. And there's small talk, not about his hair. Jen has not picked a major. Lily took her first steps a few days ago. Yes, Gail knows she has to put up a baby gate. She will get to it. And the people who bought Graham's house only use it for the summers. Clip four.
It's sort of sad to think of that house all cobwebby.
I don't know if this, like, the way she delivers the line is Jen trying to be non-threatening or Michelle Williams unconsciously slipping into a Willow Rosenberg line delivery. But if it's the latter, she's has a way better Willow than she did at Graham's. Then the phone rings. Gail's plumber is blowing off a service call at the restaurant, and when Gail doesn't assert herself quickly enough for Dawson's taste, he leaps up to man at the presumably guy. I guess because Gail still hasn't hired a new general manager to replace Mitch and is not capable of cracking skulls herself with her tiny little woman hands. Dawson states that he will meet the plumber at the restaurant in 15 minutes, which, enjoy waiting. That's not how shit works with contractors. He will show up when he feels like it. And ignores Gail's attempt to keep him home with Jen. And he pecks Jen on the cheek as he goes, leaving Jen alone to absorb this. Clip five.
So, you two are dating now.
Maybe spare your new girlfriend this awkward moment by making that clear to your mother before you show up with her, especially when you know from your last relationship your mom is weirdly territorial about this stuff.
Yeah, or bring her with you to the restaurant. Like,
yes.
So many options.
Bring her to a coffee shop to, like, read a book and wait or something. I mean, it's, you know, Gail has a relationship with Jen. Jen lived with them for a while. Like, they are on friendlier terms than she was with Gretchen, certainly.
Yeah.
But still awkward.
Yeah.
So when we return to the house, apparently hours have passed. I don't know what this plumbing job was, but it was big, apparently. Or Dawson was just waiting 6 hours for the guy to show up, as I predicted. But Gail and Jen are installing the baby gate. They discuss the absent Dawson. Clip six.
He loves you and this family and this house so much that Sometimes I wonder if it doesn't hold him back from moving forward with his life.
Well, he seems to be moving forward with parts of his life just fine.
Part that you aren't entirely pleased about.
Am I that transparent?
Everything is really nice between us, Gail. I really just am kind of crazy about him, and I didn't want him to be happy.
Well, then we both want the same things.
How would you feel if he moved into Grams's attic?
Well, I would miss having him around here, but I know that he needs to get a place of his own.
Has he told you about this film school in Boston that he's been looking into?
No, he didn't mention it. Every time I bring up school, he conveniently changes the subject, but I would love it if he went back to school.
Me too.
So have you talked to him about it?
Well, Jen has been dating him for 3 minutes and you've been his mother for 18 years and you live with him. So I think her telling you is her way of suggesting you talk to him, Gail.
I think she was very clear, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What Jen actually says is that she is scared of pushing Dawson into anything he might not be ready for. Gail says that Dawson inherited Mitch's stubbornness, so Jen will have to push him. Not her job, in my opinion. When Dawson finally staggers home, Jen is sitting on the steps, surrounded by greenery in just her thin sweater in Massachusetts in January. Dawson suggests makeup sex. Jen doesn't think he'd be up for it, but he says he's an 18-year-old guy who just lost his virginity. She'd be surprised to find out what he's up for. I don't think she'd be that surprised.
I don't think she would.
He asks about her night, and she says she spent most of it talking to Gail. Like, what else would she have done? Hidden his room? Dawson asks if it was weird, but Jen says they got past that once Gail figured out Jen is into Dawson for more than his body. They talked about him moving to Grams's attic, and even as Dawson wilts, Jen presses on, saying it would be a really great place for him to study. Clip 7.
You know, I've been thinking seriously about that. But right now, it's just not the right time.
Actually, it is. And I'm not the only one who feels that way.
When did you and my mom suddenly become close enough to start sharing insights about what's best for my life?
Sweetie, you're not required to be the husband.
The families are complicated. It's not that simple.
You think that I don't know that?
Well, you have to admit you're not the best person in the world to be giving me advice on parents.
That's not fair.
No, I'm just stating the facts, Jen. I mean, how can you give me advice about how to deal with my mother when you don't even talk to yours? I mean, I appreciate how much you care about my life, but if you want to talk to me about how I should live it, we should find a different subject.
I actually don't really want to talk to you at all right now.
The clarinet is sad.
Yeah.
That was shitty. Dawson, she's trying to help you. She's actually telling you what your mother thinks, so maybe you should listen instead of being a shithead.
Yeah.
So later, Dawson is dangling his feet off the dock when Gail comes out to join him. He has Frankenstein's monster's hair fully in this scene. You can see in the visual aids. She had been worried about what might be going on at her house after she went to sleep tonight, but now she's worried about what won't be. Okay. Dawson says he and Jen had their first fight, but they'll work it out. Gail doesn't think they will, because until Dawson can wake up every day thinking about himself, he won't be able to be in a relationship or go to school or have the life he deserves. Dawson does want all those things, but not until he's sure that Gail and Lily are set. And now it's my turn to say that's not his job, and Gail joins me. Dawson is going to be done with that now. Clip 8.
Look, I am probably more guilty than you know. I mean, there's part of me that has loved having you around, but it's just not fair, and it's just not right. And seeing you tonight with Jen and realizing how much she wants you in Boston, it's made it all clear to me. I mean, the girl is head over heels smitten with you. She really cares about you and your future.
I don't know how I would have got through all this without her.
Lily and I will be okay. I promise. I'll hire some help around here if I need to. Some Dawson. Go to Boston. Live in that attic. You have been such a help to me the past few months. I can't even begin to say thank you. I feel the same way about you that I know your father would.
I'm proud of you.
Aw, these two are nice together. I can't hate them.
It's sweet. And Gail and Jen are sweet together, too. Mm-hmm. Like, it's that fight is a mark on the storyline. But otherwise, I found it surprisingly charming.
I agree. So Dawson and Gail hug, both getting misty. Dawson guesses he has some apologizing to do, and Gail tells him groveling always worked for Mitch. So when Dawson makes it back to his room, Jen is waiting in her flannel pajamas, looking across at Gramps' old house. Dawson gasps that she is so beautiful, and Jen immediately says, okay, apology accepted. He had a lot more to say and is prepared to grovel, but Jen doesn't need it. She says he's right. She doesn't have experience in what he's going through. Nearly no one he knows does, he says, but he thinks Jen is right. It's time for him to move into the attic. Jen gasps that they can decorate. Like, is anyone going to run this by Grams?
No.
They're really making a lot of assumptions. They kiss, and even though we just saw how low the camera was to shoot Dawson's face over Michelle Williams' shoulder, when they're face-to-face in the same frame to kiss, she is quite obviously standing on an apple box, and you can see the top and bottom of these in the visual aids. When they pull apart, she looks back out the window, and he stands behind her with his arms weirdly draped by her sides, making a weird triangle on her stomach, like it's the pose that usually see straight guys do with their pregnant wives. It's very odd. So Jen comments on how weird it is the way things work out, that they were so close all those years, but it took moving to a different city to get together. And, you know, Dawson did climb into her bedroom window on one very horny night, after which we were all wondering, who fucked? But I guess this episode's writer, Jeffrey Stepakoff, decided to let a couple of old episodes go by unmentioned. There's way more lore in the A-plot. And what Dawson does say is that it would have been fun to have done something at Grams' former house. Jen reminds him of what Grams always says, no regrets. Dawson says the house doesn't belong to Jen anymore, but she says it will always belong to her. And when we see them next, they have apparently broken into the neighbor's, we heard, boarded up house to light a fire and a bunch of candles to fuck. But we are fortunately joining them afterward. And there's some chit chat about whether they'll be able to keep the magic alive when they're living together and Jen's expectations regarding the toilet seat. She has never dated anyone she knew and liked and trusted before. Dawson thinks she's gotten herself into a healthy relationship. Neither of them knows how long it takes for the fun to go out of one of those, but they're excited to find out. And I hope they brought over their own bedding, or else this is very inconsiderate to the people that bought Grams' house, apparently for a huge markup that let her buy the mansion they have in Boston, by the way.
The whole thing, where did they get the candles? Is the flue open? Like, I was very, like, I get it. It's television. It looked very nice.
Sure.
The fact that anything sexy happened while she was wearing those pajamas is, I'm sure they're very comfortable, but like they are not a 19-year-old's pajamas.
That's what she was wearing when they had sex for the first time. So maybe like that's his thing.
Yeah. I'm furious at Jeffrey Stepakoff for making me defend Henry.
Mm.
Like not that that was a good relationship, but just the complete erasure of
it's true.
The boy she dated for a year who was nice to her.
Mm-hmm.
Just wild.
Well, he never brought her home, as far as we know, so I guess that's
also
it.
Hard to believe, but sure.
Right. Anyway, on to the A-plot. New couples might be sparking at the club. At the B&B, that set, I guess they did not put in mothballs completely. Joey is moping on the couch watching Wheel of Fortune when Bessie and her stripy sweater enter with the mail. Joey pounces on her to see if her grades are in it, which they aren't. So Bessie, as a pretext to resetting the plot for new viewers, tries to get Joey to admit she's in a bad mood because of Dawson and Jen. But Joey snappishly says she doesn't want to talk about it. Bessie asks when Joey last did something wild, capital S, capital W, like the episode title. And Joey claims she's wild quite frequently, exactly the way someone who was wild would say it. Bessie asks if there isn't someone Joey could call, and she sarcastically says she called Dawson and Jen. And before Bessie has to tell Joey she can take her attitude and go sleep on the lawn, there is a knock at the door. Joey perks up, but it's just Pacey, reminding us of the time he danced in the kitchen with Frederick Fricky so that we can all be impressed about a 2-plus-season-old reference. When Pacey asks about Joey's holiday, she claims she's having a wonderful time. She should be with the huge InStyle magazine in her hand, RIP, the print version. Pacey was going to offer her a ride back to Boston, but he'll just go, to which Joey leaps off the couch and leaves in her slippers with one small and seemingly mostly empty knapsack. Like, her toothbrush is still in the bathroom, so whatever.
Do we know when we are? Because she makes a Daytona reference, which made me think it was spring break.
Oh, I don't think so. It's January.
Okay. I mean, that makes more sense, because why would she be getting her grades over spring break unless they're on trimesters or something? But
Yeah. They rarely did a Christmas episode. And I guess they, even if they were going to, they wouldn't have this year because of how everything got pushed.
Right.
But I think it's between semesters. Like, okay, this is over winter break.
Right. That makes a little more sense.
Yeah. So remember when I said Dawson and Jen don't notice they're passing Joey and Pacey going in the opposite direction? Joey and Pacey don't notice them either in the red vintage Mustang Pacey is driving. Later in the scene, we find out it's his, although he doesn't want to tell Joey when she asks how he got it. For now, Joey's ranting that, of course, Dawson ended up with Jen. She's wild, and idiot guys always end up with the wild girl. She saw it as soon as Jen got out of that taxi, because we're citing the series premiere now. And also from what we've seen, Jen is mostly wild about knitting, but okay. Pacey tells Joey she's going to have to get over it, and she claims she has. She hardly thinks about them at all anymore. And Pacey changes the subject to the opening civilization now has for a server. Danny would go nuts for Joey with all her experience, but Joey's not that eager to get back into food service, not to mention Mrs. Valentine would give her a terrible reference. I don't know why she thinks that, but okay. Pacey changes the subject again, this time to Joey's grades, but she's not that worried about them. She studied and did her best, and there's nothing she can do about her grades now. And no, when she gets back, she's not going to run straight to the bursar's office to check them, probably because the bursar's office disburses money and is not involved with grades. Get your academic jargon right if you're going to try and needle college students about shit, Pacey and Jeffrey Stepakoff. But he doesn't. He just tells Joey there's a difference between saying you're going to change and then actually doing it. So then Pacey's walking Joey to her room, asking what she's going to do there alone. Joey's going to enjoy having the place to herself, which of course is when she opens the door and sees Audrey is there back early from her ski trip to Telluride. Because she and her parents fought about money, they even wanted her to get rental boots. Pacey, giving the place an approving nod to remind us this is the first time he has been there, asks what's so wrong with rental boots, and Joey has to say they're hard to coordinate with a hot pink bunny suit. And Audrey adds that she can't give campus tours anymore because some woman complained about Audrey hitting on her son. How was Audrey supposed to know he was in high school? LOL. Fine. That did make
me
laugh.
It was funny. It made me laugh too, but like switching between Audrey being very stupid and very smart is starting to bug me. It's partly just like the vocabulary thing and the way that everybody on the show is written, that like she'll use a big ass word and then say something very stupid. But I would like them to decide, or maybe she's just joking. I love her. Please don't get me wrong. It's just a writing problem.
Yes, definitely.
But
so Audrey's going to have to get a new job, at which Pacey and Joey exchange a knowing look that Audrey does not understand. Smash cut to the kitchen at Civilization. As Danny does prep, Audrey enthuses to Pacey over how perfect she's going to be for this job. It'll be like having dinner with fun new people every night. Pacey explains that she'll be bringing people food, not dating them, but Audrey says people want a little personality with their food. When Pacey says they want good food served professionally, and Danny starts eavesdropping, Audrey turns to the menu, gasping that she loves how everything is served on a bed of or drizzled with something or other, which she's supposed to be a rich girl from Los Angeles. None of this would be new to her at all. She would be familiar with Nouveau American cuisine, but whatever. Clip 9.
Listen, grilled foie gras drizzled with a mango sauterne reduction sauce. I can so sell that. What the hell is foie gras?
It's fattened duck liver.
Ew, that's just wrong.
Oh, no, you wouldn't say that if you tried to trust me. It would blow your mind.
Tell me something. Does this sort of thing usually work with the ladies?
What sort of thing?
The if I'm this passionate about the sensual art of cooking, imagine how good I am in bed thing. Imagine how good you'd do if you actually trimmed your nails.
I'm a busy guy.
Hey, you were the one who was talking about professionalism, buddy.
Waiter, is this your girlfriend?
No. This is Audrey. She's here to interview for the waitress position.
Hi. I really love what you've done with the place.
Welcome aboard, Audrey.
What? Welcome aboard?
Any woman that can put Witter in his place like that is the kind of woman that I want working for me. Can you start tomorrow?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. I'll go get you the paperwork. You, young man, make sure that she tastes the foie gras. It's fantastic.
I love that guy.
I love her. I'm sorry. I know. People are saying on the Discord that like she's going to take a turn, and I'm hopeful it's going to be in a while.
I don't remember. Yeah, still in a love place with her.
Yep. Then we're outside what keeps being called the bursar's office, but would be the registrar's office in my experience, where I guess we're supposed to think all the grades for all the classes in the whole college have been printed on paper and posted on like four boards. In the episode where she was going to drop, there were like thousands of people lined up.
Yeah.
In the one line, like, this is not enough pages for even the freshman class.
Yeah, I don't remember how this worked, but it didn't work like this for sure. I think we just got them in the mail.
Yeah, we did too.
Certainly they wouldn't be posted. And also, this might not be a Canadian thing, like everyone's social security number, right? They're anonymous, so they're by ID.
Right.
And our IDs were our socials back then.
Oh.
Nobody was thinking about identity theft. So it was just very funny to me to see like every student's social security number just posted on the wall.
Oh my God.
And they were formatted like that. So it's probably realistic, but like it just the past, it was funny to me because you would never do that now.
The fact that I can still remember my student ID number was 114-3767. Don't remember my parents' phone number now. It's like really
the reason I know my social, which I will not say on the podcast, is because it was my student ID in college and I needed that's when I needed to learn it because it was everything.
Wow. That's crazy.
Which I assume that has changed.
I would hope.
But yeah, I also was like, how many classes are there? And you would never do that.
No.
Ever, ever, ever.
But anyway, Joey finds the printouts for her psychology, calculus, and humanities classes in the same hallway. Like, they're all very close by. And we see a series of close-ups of her unpainted, scraggly, cuticled index finger as she determines she has racked up 4 A's. And then she sees that the grades for English Lit 213 have not been posted yet. We're about to find out this is Professor Wilder's class, which is notably not a lit class. It's a creative writing class. But whatever. He shows up and teases her too fondly about being OCD, also asking what grades she has already gotten, which is certainly not his business. But of course, she tells him, and they go on clip 10.
Well, I bet you're looking for this.
Oh.
Oh. Oh, what? Oh, my. Oh, crap. Oh, give me that right this second before I jump out of my skin. You're about to find out the results of months worth of sweat and labor, and oh, is all you can say for yourself?
You're having way too much fun here.
Job perk.
It's another A.
Oh my God.
She hugs him.
Take it you're not going to contest the grade?
No.
You deserve it.
Okay, don't talk about her skin, don't talk about her sweat, don't talk about her labor, don't let her hug you.
Why is she sweating in English class? Stop it, it's not that hard. I mean, he is her type, I guess.
Yeah.
Right? Smug and annoying and full of himself. It all tracks, but
true.
I don't like it.
No. This hug is too long and too readily accepted by the head of the English department, which LOL, but still, and Joey's tongue thing is back some more. You can see in the visual aids.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Then we're at a club where the live band has just finished a tuneless Jessie's Girl cover as Joey parries Audrey's many questions about her hug with Professor Wilder, including how long it lasted and which body parts touched. Joey finally says they had sex right there on the formica outside the bursar's office. And Audrey takes a beat to realize Joey's kidding. And when Joey says it was just a hug, of course they didn't kiss. Audrey announces that the two of them are going to cut loose and kiss some boys tonight. When Joey asks which, Audrey stops the one passing their table at that moment and orders him to kiss her friend. Joey's openly horrified stare somehow does not cue him to keep moving. So when he agrees, we get this. Clip 11.
You know, I'd love to make out with you, but until my tongue completely heals, I just think it's too risky.
Huh? There was a piercing incident with... It's bad.
The scene ends with Joey kind of clowning, like rubbing Audrey's head, and it's a little cute.
It's cute, and I appreciate the yes ending from Audrey. I don't appreciate the stupid lamps on the tables yet again. Why is this a thing?
No.
Certainly was not going to clubs when I went to school in Boston, but this doesn't look like a college club to me. And unfortunately, Kiss Boy looked like Elon Musk to me.
He was not cute. Sorry to this man, if you know him or if you are him listening.
Are him, yeah.
He's a very random, for sure. Over to the restaurant where Danny calls Pacey over as Pacey's on his way out. Assuming he's in trouble, Pacey tries to get ahead of it by saying he was going to tell Danny about those lobsters, but Pacey didn't do anything wrong. In fact, in his 6 months at Civilization, he has impressed Danny, who is promoting him and giving him a 20% raise. Preposterous, but okay.
Yes.
He knew Pacey had the talent to excel at cooking, but not whether he would have the character to see it through. And he also hands Pacey his holiday bonus, which is a little envelope of several $100 bills.
Right. Why is he running drugs out of the restaurant? Why is that a thing?
I mean, from what I've heard about restaurants, maybe, but I've never worked in one, so I don't know.
He's also like prepping some sort of kebab during the scene, which is like, you know, easy, good actor business, but does not make any sense with what we've heard about the foie gras, etc.
Yes. And also not what you would do the night before, I feel like. That's what you do the day of, or else all your vegetables get like limp and gross.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird.
Danny calls Pacey Chef Witter and says he's glad Pacey stayed. So I guess all Pacey's judgment about Danny cheating on his wife evaporated as soon as Karen left town. So fine. Back to the club where Audrey's having a great time and rhetorically asking why she would ever want to leave college life. Joey says eventually she'll have to pay back her student loans, but I'm pretty sure anyone whose parents got her into school by making a six-figure donation/bribe did not take out loans, although talk of rental boots does suggest a change of circumstances may be coming. Who knows? But Audrey refuses to allow pragmatism to ruin their fun night and homes in on the hot bassist on stage, who is, of course, Charlie, although it takes Joey just long enough to recognize him to reset his identity and plot for new viewers. Audrey is aghast to find out this is Charlie the jerk and says Jen has good taste in men, musicians, because these guys rock. She wonders if the band remembers when she sang with them a few months ago in the season premiere. And when Audrey takes off to talk to them, Charlie makes eyes at Joey and she squints back, but in a very flirty way. And then Joey's pounced on by Pacey. After they celebrate her grades and his promotion with a high five, they're both shocked to see Audrey on stage, launching into Son of a Preacher Man. And in my many travels on television, I've been a student of which stars will eventually bully producers into letting them show off their musical talents, like Mary Lou Hanna in Taxi, Dixie Carter in Designing Women, Cynthia Geary in Northern Exposure. But I would not have thought Busy Phillips had that kind of juice only halfway through her first season here, or else I guess they were just short because we got a verse, a chorus, and then another verse and chorus, and it eats clock, so why not? But it's very excessive.
They did not, she did not have the juice for them to pay for the rights for streaming because that is cut from Hulu in its entirety.
Okay, well, that's what happened.
Yeah. and they definitely were not singing Jesse's Girl, even though you could see his mouth moving and not matching up at all. The next scene is plot dependent, so they did have to spring for that one. But
okay, yes.
Yeah, that's all news to me.
Well, now you know.
Yeah.
So sometime later, Joey's alone at the bar when the guy that Audrey asked to kiss her tries again. He tells Joey they don't have to kiss. They can just get to know each other. His name is Tom. And Joey gently dismisses him. And then clip 12.
Can I buy you something to drink?
Clearly, subtext and humor have no effect on stupidity. Would you please leave me?
Nice.
Do you really think you should bandy about words you don't understand?
Okay, stop. Just stop.
Stop what?
The castrating sure routine, the defense mechanism. Look, I totally understand. I'm a girl who looks like you needs one. All right, but you can drop it around me. All I want to do is meet you and talk a little. Okay, fine, I'll start. Hi, I'm Charlie.
Charlie, how do we talk about why one of all of these girls in the entire club, I'm the blessed one? I mean, what is it about me that piqued your interest?
It's the hair behind the ear thing.
Okay, he goes into a monologue about how sometimes when he's having a tough night on stage, he tries to connect with someone in the crowd who's really listening. And when he saw Joey tucking her hair behind her ears, he could tell she was really paying attention. But she did the hair behind her ear thing right before he came over to talk to her. So I assume he's also on a Boston Bay College improv team. But anyway,
he's also a member of a band whose members are all 40.
Oh, my God. Yes. There's a shot in the visual aids of the drummer who is 40. I would say minimum. He might be like pushing 50.
Which is like, I guess that's fine. It could be an all ages band, but it just raises so many questions about how he met them and why he's there. And maybe that's why he's looking for a girl in the crowd, because he can't hang out with his contemporaries while he's in rehearsal. I don't know. Right. It's very strange.
Because they all have to go home to their wives after their gigs. But yeah, his whole thing is like, I don't have a shtick. I think you do have a shtick, and not having a shtick is your shtick. The scene from Singles or whatever. But anyway. Yeah,
he's smooth. I'll give him credit. Like, if we didn't know and if she didn't know, but it is a shtick.
But we know. Anyway, they go on. Clip 13.
And I thought to myself, I want to meet that beautiful girl.
Just tell me, does this sort of thing actually work?
I wouldn't know. I'm not like the rest of these pre-epic Neanderthals in this place.
No?
I've never done this before.
Really?
Yeah.
So you must have used a different tack with Jen Lindley, huh?
Joey. A smart girl from Worthington.
Charlie. Womanizer from Boston Bay.
Yeah, this is deeply humiliating. But hey, you can't blame a guy for trying.
No. But you don't have to have a drink with him.
Not bad.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. And then we see Audrey's such a cool girl that she's shooting pool with Pacey and getting a round of applause from a bunch of strangers watching her ass and cleavage as she leans over the table. Sorry, but they are quite visible. When she beats Pacey, she tells him to rack him for another game, which is when Joey wanders over and declines Pacey's invitation for her to play Audrey instead. Pacey asks how long it took Joey after he left to go look for her grades, and she kind of deflates a little and then says, clip 14.
Okay, I'm an obsessive freak. I freely admit it. There is no hope for me.
No, that's not true. There is a part of you that knows how to let loose. You just have to let her loose every once in a while.
What part?
The other Joey, the carefree girl who knows how to drink and play strip poker and go away on a sailboat for a summer. The girl who can get up in front of a crowd of complete strangers and sing at a beauty pageant.
Other Joey?
Yes, the other Joey. The girl who knows better than to let things that are completely out of her control bother her. Like Dawson and Jen.
Hey, guys. You wanna know why else I love pool? Because the chalk matches my eyeshadow. How cute is that?
It's cute.
It's cute.
It's cute. Again, with the references to long ago times. The beauty pageant was season one.
Yeah. Did she ever play strip poker? I don't remember that.
Yeah, she played strip poker at a party when they were like someone's house party. I think Drew's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I just feel like being uptight is like her whole personality, and
it is.
She leans into it, and this is just a completely untrue narrative that there's another Joey.
Yep. Joey tells Pacey she's going to head back to the bar and keep an eye out for the other Joey. Pacey tells her to get them all a round of drinks on him, handing her one of his hundreds. And on her way back to the bar, Joey gets intercepted by Charlie, who has a red solo cup for her. And I don't want to profile anyone, but this is exactly the category of guy you do not want to accept a drink from when you did not see it poured.
And this is not a secret in 2002, and Joey would absolutely know, and it would have been part of her freshman orientation, and don't do it.
And I think she doesn't, but anyway, Charlie just wants a second chance, he says. Joey says that Jen's not available, but he met with Joey, who didn't realize he had had a first chance with her. And then it's time for banter, clip 15.
What exactly did I do that was so terrible? All right, I hit on you. Is that a crime?
Please.
If there's anything I'm guilty of, it's simply being attracted to you. I never said anything to you that I didn't mean. I think you are beautiful. And truth be told, I think you're drop dead gorgeous.
What the whole I'm just a bass player you can take home to mama thing didn't work, so now you're using simple flattery.
Okay, so I made a fool out of myself before.
That I'm prepared to do.
Oh, good. Because you display quite a mastery at that particular skill.
Give me as much crap as you want. At least I'm not afraid to take a chance.
What are you implying that I am?
When was the last time you took one?
Oh, that's none of your business.
Do they teach classes in Uptight at Worthington? Or is it just a prerequisite for admission?
I'm not uptight.
Then why won't you tell me when the last time was you took a chance?
Because I'm not going to recount my reckless behavior for you.
But there's not much to recount. But I'll bet the list of prudish perfectionism goes on and on ad nauseum. Come on. Joey, the smart girl from Worthington, when was the last time you did something completely and indisputably wild?
There it is again, except wordier for no reason. The episode title. Later, Audrey has beat Pacey at another round of pool. They're setting up another one when Pacey wonders where Joey got to. Audrey mentions the pact she and Joey made to kiss guys tonight. Pacey says that doesn't sound like Joey, and Audrey admits she made the pact for both of them. And you probably guessed where Joey is before they did. She's on stage. Clip 16.
Audrey, listen to that. Listen!
Oh my God, are you hearing that too?
I think so.
No, it's not possible.
Oh, it is possible. Check that out.
I'm begging you to beg me. I want you to want me.
Oh my God! That can't be the same girl that sleeps in my room. Who is that girl?
That is other Joey.
I'll try my old brown shoes. I'll put on a brand new shirt. I'll get home early from work. If you say that you love me. Didn't I see you crying? Oh, didn't I see you crying? I'm feeling all alone without a friend. You know you feel like dying. Oh, didn't I see you crying?
Oh my God. It's very, if you've ever seen the video of Katie Couric, this is from like the 2000s maybe, like drunk and dancing at someone's random wedding. It's like, this is the energy that, that Katie Holmes is bringing to this performance.
Yeah, I wish there were less of it, but I did find it cute. And it, not to keep making this the Busy Phillips fan club, but it's mostly cute because Audrey, we're seeing it through Audrey's eyes. And
yes.
That's adorable.
It is.
But it goes on forever.
Oh my God, it does. Charlie, accompanying Joey, acts like Audrey did not just blow her away an hour ago at like 30% effort versus whatever this was. We get a little more. Clip 17.
I want you to want me. I want you to want me. I want you to want me.
Okay, no one who doesn't know Joey, and so that's everyone except for Audrey and Pacey,
right?
Should be reacting like this. It's like fine. It's like C plus karaoke quality performance.
Yeah, and the band is fine.
They're
like,
fine.
But yeah, who cares? Like, nobody would be paying any attention to this performance, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the band should be fine because I assume they've been playing together since the late 1970s. But anyway.
Oh no, their bass player died and it's Paul and Charlie.
Yeah, of old age. Anyway, Joey soaks up a little applause and then darts backstage, marveling at what hot shit she is. Charlie runs out after her saying she was amazing and he didn't know she had that in her. And he probably didn't know she had this in her either, pouncing on his face and giving him a classic dry Joey Potter kiss, which apparently is so hot it lasts through a commercial break. And when Joey releases Charlie, Joey tells him never to call her uptight and then runs back on stage, I guess for an encore. Like, Boston's been through enough. They had the molasses flood and now this. It's too much. So later, the club is emptying out. Audrey and Pacey are wondering where Joey went. Audrey can't imagine what it would take for Joey to leave with some guy, but then spots Charlie walking over to where Joey's sitting on the edge of the stage and turns Pacey in the other direction, suddenly remembering that Joey said she might have to leave early to study. Good friend. But she doesn't even have classes to study for yet, Pacey says. And Audrey's like, haha, well, you know our Joey, and steers him out without seeing her. And on the stage, Charlie assumes Joey's friends have gone and offers her a lift on his motorcycle, clip 18.
What? Making a fool out of myself again, huh?
No, of course you have a motorcycle.
What's that supposed to mean?
And of course you don't understand.
Hey, it's a Harley.
I'm sure it is.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Then Pacey's dropping Audrey off at the dorm. She comments that it's more fun hanging out with him than a hot guy she wants to date, and he takes it as the compliment she means it to be. And he offers to walk her to her dorm, but she says the place is crawling with security guards over break. In fact, Carlos is probably on her hall right now. Maybe his wife had the baby. Clip 19.
Pretty chummy with the guys who work here over break for someone who just got back last night.
Yeah. Well, that's me, you know. Chummy Audrey.
You never went home, did you?
I really did get into a big fight with my parents about money. It was just a little bigger than I mentioned. Okay. It was a lot bigger. Don't tell Joey, okay? I know it sounds kind of weird, but sometimes there are things that you don't even want the people who are close to you to know about.
It doesn't sound weird to me. In fact, I may understand better than you think.
Could you see this beautiful piece of meddling machinery in front of you?
Yes!
This has sat in the police impound in Caveside for 3 months.
And my father just gave it to me. He said that he wanted someone who deserves it to have it. And he actually told me that he was proud of me.
Okay, a few things. One, that might have been a nice scene for the audience to see. You could have spent that money on getting John Finn in instead of having Audrey sing two verses and two choruses of Son of a Preacher Man. Is A. B, I don't think that's legal what he did.
No.
Okay, good.
No, I had the same note. Very, very ACAB.
Yeah, yeah. But I will give it to Jeffrey Stepakoff for the contrast of Gail saying she was proud of Dawson 10 minutes before this in the episode, like it was no big deal for her at all, and this being like a pivotal moment for Pacey and his dad's relationship. So after Pacey explains that it's probably the first time in his life Pacey's ever heard his father say that, Audrey guesses there's a but, which is that Pacey doesn't know how long it could last. Audrey won't tell anyone, and they agree the parents are strange, and then Audrey darts forward and pecks Pacey on the cheek, because the pact. And she knows Joey won't do it, so she thought someone should, and she hopes Pacey doesn't mind. Pacey rarely minds being kissed by a beautiful woman, and then they part until work tomorrow. And then on the street somewhere near the club, Charlie rolls his bike along next to Joey on the sidewalk, hectoring her to let him give her a ride. She prefers to walk, even in this cold. Charlie thinks there's a part of her that wants to ride off with him, or else what was the kiss about? She walks around to say that, yes, there is a girl that lives deep inside her that occasionally comes out to let loose and blow people's minds. But if Charlie ever mentions that girl or what she did tonight to any other person, Joey will deny knowing anything about her. She returns to the sidewalk. Charlie's last attempt to sway her is to call her smart girl from Worthington again, but she just says goodnight. And he puts on a tiny toy helmet you can see in the visual aids. And that's it for them for now. And I really thought this was leading into Downtown Crossing because of how it ended. It does seem like she's going to go straight from here to an ATM, but it's not the next one.
Yeah, and not to keep being Boston College cop, but she's walking from, I assume, downtown to Cambridge in December.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
No.
Okay.
In her little club outfit?
With
no.
Half her stomach showing? Yeah.
Yeah, and the tea shuts down at like midnight or one, like very early. You get a cab or take the ride on the motorcycle, girl. Yes. What are you doing?
Let's close up by naming our episode MVP. Ooh, tough one. I guess I'll say Danny, since he's a really unbelievably, and I mean that literally, good boss. He's extremely nice, or trying to launder money through Pacey. Either way, Pacey benefits.
Yeah, I think mine is obviously Audrey.
Sure.
Because really, no flaws.
Fair. Least valuable player. I know we're supposed to like Joey in this episode, but she's such a nerd. And there's a gif in the visual aids of her like boogieing in her flared jeans with her ugly fucking boots I will never get over. And she's just so embarrassing. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he was barely in the episode, but I got to give it to Professor Creepy. I just, I just can't with that guy.
I know. It's tough.
Or maybe to the bursar / registrar's office for wasting all that paper.
Two excellent choices. Next time, Jen starts feeling crowded by Dawson. Jack's not sure how he ended up with one of the frat's coveted single rooms. Pacey has to decide whether his future is going to happen on dry land. And Elliot from the season premiere returns. Never forget to check out our visual aids for all our lovingly snapped, annotated, and gift materials from the show. You can get all of those, plus links to buy our book and follow us on Blue Sky. Adam, please tell the listener where they can find more of you online.
You can find me on various social medias at Adam807, and you can find my podcast about The Muppet Show and other 70s and 80s nonsense at Muppeturgy.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
And I believe you did a deep dive on the recent Muppet Show special with Sabrina Carpenter, is that correct?
We did. You can also find me on a recent episode of Extra Hot Great talking about the Muppet Show special and in lots more detail, perhaps too much detail, on the latest episode of Muppeturgy.
I'm Tara Ariano, and I'm all cobwebby. Our producer, David T. Cole, wants you to want him. And on behalf of all of us and the Abs and Sarah D. Bunting, thank you for listening. We will see you next time.
Goober.